Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and this is another one of our pre-system interviews with System 2011 faculty. And one of the reasons that I'm having the final system seminar in New York City is to make it easier for some of my friends and colleagues to come and participate and speak. New York City has long been one of the capitals of the world when it comes to direct marketing talent. I think between that and Chicago, and then of course the outpost out there in LA, you've got maybe 99% of all the great direct marketers in the world. And New York is particularly strong in publishing, always has been. When I say always has been, I mean going back to the 20s and probably a lot earlier. Today we're going to hear from someone who is right there involved in one of the biggest print mail order direct marketing success stories of all time. I mean, this is a textbook case. And in addition to the success in the print arena, has also successfully moved to television, infomercials, long-form TV ads, and to the Internet. So lots to learn from this call. Two things about our guest, and I'll announce his name in a second. One, we've already mentioned that he was part of this company when it went from good size to huge-sized. But also, he is a real super educator and has been for a long time. Some of my most prized possessions are sessions that he organized with some of the super heavyweights of direct mail. I've got one with Dick Benson and I'm forgetting his first name, but Grossman, going way back to the early 90s, and I'll see if he can remember putting that on. But anyway, with no more further ado, let me introduce Brian Kurtz. Brian, how are you doing?
Good, Ken. Thanks. And that was a lovely introduction. I really appreciate that.
Well, let's talk.
It was Gordon Grossman, and we used to do these things. The founder of our company, Marty Edelston, reveres the past as I do. I don't live in the past. I just revere it, and I learn from it. And we used to do these old timers days, we called them, and we even had some baseball themes around it. But we would bring in the greats of direct marketing to kind of talk about the war stories. But then we also, as you know, tried to take those war stories and then adapt them to the present day, which is kind of what I'm doing today in terms of taking everything I've learned in direct marketing over 30 years and applying it to what we do today, both in TV and on the Internet.
Well, that's been the filter that or the lens that we at the System Seminar always look at the Internet through. So, for example, if we're looking at a new technique, one that hasn't yet, let's say, been tested or proven yet, one of the things that we'll do is say, hey, does this make sense from a classic direct marketing point of view? We also do that with speakers. I look to see, hey, all right, this guy's doing great things right now today with certain configurations, marketing configurations on the Internet, but is what he's doing rooted in direct marketing? And then when we're looking for future trends, same thing. If I'm looking at a trend and saying, okay, is this going to really go somewhere or is this a fad? Again, I take out that direct marketing, that classic direct marketing lens, and look at it through that lens. And it's probably the most useful tool I've got. And that's why we're so glad that Brian's going to be joining us in April in New York, because he's a real student of the game. And his company, Boardroom, as he pointed out, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Boardroom story, not only runs a really successful business, but also took a very leading role in helping educate other people in the field of direct marketing. A lot of our listeners are already hip to direct marketing. Some of them aren't. For those that aren't, very briefly, I'll go out on a limb and say this. Based on 17 years of Internet marketing experience, I would say probably the most valuable thing you could do for yourself as an Internet marketer is get some of the old classic direct marketing books, mail order books, the John Cables, for example, Tested Advertising, I find is endlessly useful. Claude Hopkins, which everybody has heard of, but everybody should still read anyway. Dick Benson wrote an amazing book, which Boardroom put back in print, which is called The
Secrets of Successful Direct Mail. And the Claude Hopkins is Scientific Advertising, I guess, right?
Yep, Scientific Advertising. And then his other book, which I like even better, which was My Life in Advertising.
Yes, yes.
And then Maxwell Sackheim wrote an amazing book, not easy to find, but definitely worth looking for. My First 60 Years in Advertising, that's 6-0. Boardroom put out another book, by the way, not so easy to find, called Mail Order! !
Yeah, that one was a little dated. That was Gene Schwartz. But actually, the book that we republished that was sort of the lost classic, was Breakthrough Advertising by Gene Schwartz. And that was a book that we actually saw. It was written in 1966, and we saw it on eBay with a real bid of $950. So I went to Gene's widow, Barbara, and said, you know, we got to bring this book back. It's crazy. And so we actually republished that book. And Gene, I think you knew him pretty well, and I was a student of Gene's. And that book is about human behavior. It's really about direct marketing, but it's also about human behavior. And that's why we haven't changed the word of the original text from 1966.
Yeah, it's really an amazing book, and it takes advertising and marketing one of the highest levels I've seen in a book.
Yes,
because it does focus on human behavior, and I'll give people a little secret. If you only read the first chapter, it's worth the $900 price that somebody was selling it for. Literally.
Yeah, we're only selling it for $95, but I'm not selling it today. So.
Right. No, exactly. But I just want to give everybody a hint. When you're looking for a classic, when you're looking for something to help really orient yourself, Breakthrough Advertising, very important book. And honestly, the first chapter has so much in it.
You're right.
That's of perennial, everlasting value.
Right.
So let's talk a little about Boardroom. This is literally one of the great success stories in all direct marketing history. I know Marty was recently admitted to the Direct Marketing Hall of Fame. Can you tell the story a little bit for people that aren't familiar with it?
Yeah, I just want to say also that, you know, when you asked me to speak, because I know about your methodology and, you know, the importance of direct marketing to what you do today, it was one of those situations where you had me at, hello, Brian, would you like to speak? Because those are the kinds of places I want to be if I'm going to speak, because I'm not speaking that much these days. I'm trying to hunker down a little bit and do a lot of learning myself. But if I'm going to speak, it's going to be to an audience that really wants to understand direct marketing principles and then how they apply today, and they all apply. And that'll be probably the bulk of my presentation in April. But as far as a quick overview of Boardroom, Marty Edelson started it, a kitchen table startup or basement startup, took his life savings after being one of the most successful advertising salesmen around. He sold space in magazines for the most part, but he also sold yellow page advertising and he sold pencils. I mean, the guy was probably one of the best salesmen of all time. And Marty always was a voracious reader of business books and always felt that the business magazines didn't give him what people really needed to run a business. Business Week, Forbes, Fortune, Wall Street Journal would tell you what's happening at the big companies, but they wouldn't tell you really how to run a business. So Marty, after 10 years of being the business manager at Commentary Magazine, went out on his own, took his life savings and into his basement, and started Boardroom Reports. And Boardroom Reports was basically, and the first promotion for Boardroom Reports was written by Gene Schwartz, and it was something like read 300 business magazines in 30 minutes and get the crux of each. The word wasn't crux, I forget the exact word. Get the guts of each, I think. And basically, Marty started with that newsletter, and of course the irony is that he didn't have the money to start a magazine, which is what he really wanted to do. And of course the best space salesperson for magazines that ever lived launches a newsletter with no advertising. But it became a real a traditional direct marketing model in that it was direct mail, it was newsletter, it had to make money on its circulation in subscriptions. And then he discovered list rental income, which was very important at the time because it was such a unique audience and an audience of affluent executives that list rental was very important to support, at least, you know, in addition, so without advertising, to be able to support the business. And when I got to the business in 1981, I started the day Reagan was shot, believe it or not. March 30th, 1981. And the company was about 9 years old. Boardroom Reports was fairly established. Marty had just launched Bottom Line Personal, which Boardroom was the executive at business, Bottom Line was the executive at home. And then Marty had also done a few books, mostly tax books, business books, and a big book that he had done was sort of greatest hits of Boardroom Reports, which was called The Book of Business Knowledge. And when I got here, he had already sold 100,000 copies in mail order. So I got to the business. It was, about $3-4 million business when I got here. When Marty's not on the phone, I always say, thank goodness I got here to really grow the company.
Hey, can I ask a question? This is
sure.
a trivia question. Were you guys still in the McGraw-Hill building then, or were you out in Connecticut?
We were before the McGraw-Hill building. We were actually at 500 Fifth Avenue next to the library.
Oh.
We hadn't even moved to the west side of Manhattan yet on 42nd Street to the old McGraw-Hill building. And
wow.
Interestingly, this is kind of a funny thing. The reason why Marty had that space is that when he started, he couldn't afford much staff. So he did most of his research at the New York Public Library. So he needed to be close to it, and that's why he was at 500 Fifth Avenue.
Gotcha.
And the steps of the library was a great place to eat lunch, too. So.
And in those days, the rents down there weren't too bad.
They weren't too bad. I mean, it was a nice building. It's still a nice building. It's right on the it's 500 Fifth is right on the corner of 5th and 42nd. It's a nice building, but yeah. I mean, rents were affordable, but, back then, Marty, and I was here, and even in 81, cash flow was an issue, figuring out did we have enough postage for the mailing that we were going to make next week. I mean, I got a taste of what it was like to be in a true entrepreneurial organization, even though it was a little more established by the time I got here. And I think what was great for me in those early days for me is that I learned, even though I'm not as entrepreneurial as Marty, he taught me how to be intrapreneurial. And
mm-hmm.
I think it's been a great training for me because there's been so much on my plate over the last 30 years to launch new businesses, to bring in new ideas. And I think if I didn't have Marty's entrepreneurial spirit, I wouldn't have been able to not only stay here for 30 years, but I didn't have this need to go out on my own. I love the sandbox that I was playing in had so many fantastic toys in it already that why go anywhere else? Plus, I was learning from Marty, who's probably one of the best entrepreneurs of all time in this business. So anyway,
someday, not to interrupt, but someday it occurs to me that we could do a call, I should do a call, entirely about Marty's, Marty, for lack of, to sum it up, because Brian's pointing out something which is, the lessons you could learn from him are legion. But one of the many lessons you could learn from Marty is how he created a really positive, psychologically and intellectually positive work environment in such a way that everybody on the team is a contributor of creative ideas on an ongoing basis. And,
yeah, he created a continuous improvement program called iPower, which he's very proud of. And basically, while he ran the company, I'll say as a benevolent dictator, because someone, and that's why the company did so well, is because Marty was a demand for excellence everywhere he went. And he, always made the final call. He also, as you said, demanded as well everybody contribute their ideas. So, yeah, the company was always an idea machine. And doing a separate call just about Marty, you'd have people on the edge of their seats. I do have things in my presentation for April that will talk about some of the lessons that Marty has taught me, and also the people that we surrounded ourselves with, because Marty always encouraged me to, to hang out with the Gene Schwartzes and the Dick Bensons and the Gordon Grossmans of the world. And I have quotes from them throughout my presentation in April that basically are the bedrock of our business, of how we did what we did, in terms of just rules of thumb that still apply today.
And then Marty does this very simple but brilliant and very powerful thing, which is every month or most every month, he hosts a dinner for about 10, 12 people.
Actually, it used to be 14 when it was his apartment in the city, but once we were able to go to the Four Seasons in New York, the boardroom dinners, usually I'd say 15 is on the low end, 25 on the high end.
Okay.
And they are once a month, and he brings together all of our experts, whether, from all of our editorial publications, people who we do business with, in on the business side. You've been to dinners, Ken.
That's where I met Michael, actually, Michael Fishman. I was lucky to meet him, yeah.
That's right. So, you know, the boardroom dinners are just a phenomenon in themselves.
And let's talk, since people are kind of number-oriented, so when you arrived 30 years ago on the little office on Fifth Avenue before the move to McGraw-Hill, before the move to Connecticut, the company was doing, did you say, 2 to 3 million a year?
You know, I'm going to say it was under five.
Under five. And this, and for people to orient themselves, this is pure paper and ink and postage. No internet, no television.
When I got to Boardroom, it was basically we had just launched our third print newsletter. There was Boardroom Reports, Bottom Line Personal, which I mentioned, which was more the personal side of the executive. And we had just launched Tax Hotline, which was our tax newsletter. And we probably at the time had maybe 10 different books, mostly in the business area. We were just starting doing some consumer books. And so at that point, it was definitely print, paper, and all direct mail.
Gotcha. And sort of to go to the rush to the end, in a sense, or look at read the end of the book first. Where did you guys get what numbers did you hit some years once you got in full throttle?
I think the biggest year we had was when we had one of the huge infomercials running, and we had ramped up our e-letter business, where we started developing an incredible online business at the same time. I think it was right 2000, and it probably wasn't 2000. I'm thinking maybe 2005, one of those years. In the mid 2000s, we had one year we did about $153 million in revenue. But we've kind of settled in most years. I mean, the thing about the infomercial business, which is interesting, is that it's kind of a home run business where you're either you either strike out or you hit a home run. I don't know if anybody remembers, there was a guy who used to play for the Mets named Dave Kingman, and he basically either struck out or hit a home run. And that's kind of like the infomercial business. And when you have a hit running, it just changes everything. But for that period, too, what was interesting is that where we had gone from 100% direct mail as the source for all new customers, during that period in the mid-2000s, and today, I mean, we just don't have a hit infomercial at the moment, but it was like a third, a third, a third. We were getting a third of our new customers from direct mail, a third from TV, and a third from online. Now it's probably, without a TV hit, it's still about a third online and two-thirds direct mail, and that ratio changes. And we're probably settling in most years, we're kind of aiming for revenues between 75 and 100 million, and a lot depends on whether you get an infomercial hit, and we're also developing a lot of growth things within our internet business. Hard to grow direct mail at the moment. Direct mail is still very, very powerful, still works very, very well, and I'll talk about that in my presentation in April as well. To give up on direct mail would be stupid for anybody to consider that, but you have to know what you're doing, and you have to be even more precise than ever because of costs going up and being beholden to the Postal Service. I'll do a whole spiel in April about, how I rate the current internet marketers, how I grade them on things that they're doing incredibly well, things that I don't grade them as incredibly well on, and then kind of talk about why, and again, this now I sound like my father, but, why when I walk 12 miles uphill in the snow to school and got a slice of pizza for a quarter, at the same time I was also paying postage. Postage is a foreign concept to internet marketers, and I think email being so cheap to send out has made a lot of internet marketers very, very sloppy. And not that they're bad, I'm just saying they got sloppy because they didn't have to worry about that discipline. And I think what I'm going to share in April hopefully will be very valuable in that learning the discipline of dealing with postage has really given me the discipline to respect our lists and our databases in a way that I think a lot of online and email marketers don't today. And it's definitely a theme of what I want to present in April. But that's been a really interesting education for me. And again, going back to, doing the past and the present and the future, how it all comes together, you know, none of the things that come up today. I mean, we just did an affiliate launch. And, you know, the idea of an affiliate, to me, you know, that was invented by people in Dick Benson's era in the 1950s and 1960s when they did endorsed mailings, you know, under the letterhead of someone else's publication endorsing a different product. You know, while I think the technology has taken it to a whole new level, and again, you don't have to pay postage, it's a phenomenal model. But I can find almost any model today. I can find the analogy to the direct mail that I knew in the 1980s, and actually, because I've studied the 1970s and the 1960s, you can find. I mean, look at Groupon. I mean, you know, go back to Gordon Grossman and being the architect at Reader's Digest and the sweepstakes business. I mean, yep. It's amazing to me that, you know, it's kind of like what goes around comes around on steroids. And,
yep.
And I'm, you know, I know that that's a lot of what you teach. And again, that's why I was so eager to be on your faculty for this, because I think I bring a good perspective. I'm not living in the past. I am so, I'm embracing the future. I'm embracing internet marketers like they're, you know, like they're gold. But I also have realized that, you know, I bring something to the party too, based on, you know, 30 years of direct marketing know-how. So it's kind of like whenever I get together with a great internet marketer these days, and I know one when I see one, and I also kind of figure out the ones that I think I'd rather not spend time with. But the ones that I do want to spend time with, it really is a 1 + 1 = 3. And it's been a lot of fun for me because, you know, I am a little lost sometimes in the technology area, but, you know, there are other people that are better than that than me. But there's no one better than me in the area of database, of list segmentation, of the things that I grew up in. And the reason why I mentioned that list rental thing when I talked about Marty launching the business. My first job in boardroom was in list management. So I learned the business from the media side. You know, on the one hand, I could say I was a list peddler, but on the other hand, I could say that, you know, managing and renting out the boardroom list to the direct marketing community got me to learn. I learned the direct marketing business from the media side. And I think understanding lists, and I'll talk about this in my presentation as well in April, that, you know, understanding lists and list segmentation is getting a little bit lost on the marketers of today, and I think that I can shed some light on some of the things that we learned over our 40 years in business in terms of lists and segmentation and database marketing that will be incredibly valuable for any internet marketer.
Yeah, I think your point's really well taken. When you're not paying postage, it's easy to lose sight of some really critical factors and the discipline, that, you know, that's really the only word for it, that writing postage checks and writing printing checks and fulfillment cost checks just imposes this really creates this intense focus.
It does.
Because you can't just wing it, especially at the volume of mail you guys do. I mean, just to give people some sense of your volume of outgoing mail, even today, and it's interesting to hear that still today, two-thirds of your leads at this current state of things are coming from your direct mail solicitations.
Yeah, and even mailing like what we used to. I mean, I think we had 1 year we probably mailed, if we didn't mail 150 million pieces of third class mail, we certainly did 125 million. And that doesn't include all the books we sell. In our best year, we sent out 3 million hardcover books.
Oh my goodness.
Which is, you know, that's fourth class rate, or what they call bound printed matter now. Third class is called standard mail now. Right now we're doing third class standard mail probably somewhere in the neighborhood of, I'm going to say 35 or 40 million pieces a year, which still puts us probably in the top 10 or top 20 of all direct mail companies in the country. Of course, it's a lot less than 100 million, but you know, that's just the nature of the beast. I mean, a lot of other companies have, you know, it's a very, very synergistic business. You know, other people stop mailing, their list gets smaller, and then the mailing universe gets smaller overall. And that then it behooves the company to pay even more attention to their internal database and take really good care of its house customers. Again, something that the online marketers, I don't think overall are doing an A-plus job at.
Every internet marketer has an important decision to make. One, it's this: do you want to live from promotion to promotion with these, you know, huge spikes and then huge declines, and kind of eventually sometimes running out of gas altogether, or do you want to build a business? And building business may be a little less dramatic, maybe a little slower process. But at the end of the day, you have something of value. I mean, here's Boardroom now. You're in sort of your 40th year now?
The company's in its 40th. I'm in my 30th.
Okay. So the company's, you know, here it's been around for 40 years, still spitting out money every, you know, day like clockwork. You know, you can't do that if you're not paying attention to your customers and, you know, thinking about the future, basically. And the future really comes from thinking about your customers and working with them and collaborating with them and listening to them and designing your offerings for them. And yes, okay, you know, sometimes you can find a hot item and it can move very fast, or you can find a marketing technique that's very hot for a while. But individual techniques really do tend to burn out or lose effectiveness over time, whereas if what you're doing is rooted in principle, it can last, you know, for decades and decades. And
that's right.
Brian is talking about, you know, his pretty intense studies, I'd say, going back to the 60s. But of course, Brian, we could find things in the 50s and the 30s and the 20s and even the turn of the century, even before the turn of the century, that are, you know, we're talking about the 1800s turn of the century, that are absolutely 100% applicable to internet marketing today.
No question.
So that's kind of the big, kind of one of the big decisions that internet marketers need to make. From promotion, are you going to live from promotion to promotion, or are you going to weave it all together into an ongoing business with an ongoing relationship with a specific group of people, i.e. a marketplace? And I fall in the camp of build a business. And obviously, Brian and Boardroom and Marty take the same tact. And I think in the long run, it's far more lucrative to do it that way, and I think more satisfying too, than to live from promotion to promotion. And it's hard for beginners because, you know, a lot of the energy and noise and sound and fury in the internet marketing space is all about the latest, the greatest, the hottest, the newest technique, the newest promotion. You know, jump on this, jump on that. But what you really are looking for is a marketplace that has money to spend that you can serve in a sort of an evergreen fashion. And, you know, let's talk a little bit briefly about Boardroom's products. We've kind of touched on it. Basically, it's a print product. It's a newsletter that goes out. Summaries of valuable information, whether in the health arena, you've got a health newsletter, or the business arena, or the personal finance arena. And then, of course, your subscribers are very valuable because you treat them well, and they're kind of a known commodity. So a lot of people that still do prospecting by mail come to you for list rental. And then you sell books to people that are on your list, which are essentially compilations of the best of your newsletters. Is that pretty much the business?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's a couple of subtleties. We got out of the business aspect. I mean, as time went on, you know, we went from business to consumer to tax to health. And then health became so powerful that we did health, and more health. Business kind of fell by the wayside. And we actually, the three print newsletters we have right now are Bottom Line Personal, which is the broad-based health and personal finance. And then we have Bottom Line Health, which is an integrative health newsletter, which is one of the best out there because we're not affiliated with a medical school, so it's not all traditional health, and we're not affiliated with a specific doctor, so it's not one technique or one philosophy. So that's Bottom Line Health. And then we also partnered with a great naturopath, Dr. Mark Stengler, out in California, and did a natural health newsletter with him, and that's our third print newsletter. In addition to that, we have three e-letters, which we built off the database of the print newsletters. Basically, you know, most of the people who subscribe to our e-letters, a lot of them have already bought from us, whether books or newsletters, because they wanted to hear from us more often. And the e-letters, we have one called Daily Health News, We have one called Healthy Woman, which is obviously women's health. And then we have a third called Bottom Line Secrets, which is kind of a digest version of Bottom Line Personal. So in addition to sending out the 35 or 40 million pieces of direct mail a year, we also do about 20, between 20 and 25 million emails go out a month. And most of it's editorial. I mean, it's embedded ads and all kinds of, you know, permission-based marketing type stuff within our e-letters. Even though we have no advertising in our print newsletters, we do we have created an advertising model for our e-letters since they're free, but we do really send out mostly editorial. And then the book operation, one of the case histories I'm going to do in April was based on Gordon Grossman coming to me and saying, after a lot of years of doing books that were mostly just greatest hits of our newsletters, basically saying, you know, you're going to run out of material. You know, I mean, it was a big duh. You know, it's like at some point, you know, there's only so much. We had once had a creative director who used to say we could slice the salami so many different ways because we could create books and premiums and use all the same content in different ways. But at some point, you run out of content. And so one of the case histories I'm going to talk about is how we actually went into the marketplace and started buying the direct marketing rights to trade books. And I'll talk about the procedure of how that came about. I don't want to give it all away here because that'll be a good part of my speech.
Okay.
But it's a really good case history on how we developed books that weren't necessarily our own content and created an amazing model because we already had the machinery in place on the direct mail side.
Gotcha. And when Brian refers to editorial, in the internet world, we call that content, but it's, you know, it's the idea of you know, actually, as opposed to your emails being full of pitches for stuff, your emails being full of useful things that people would actually want to receive.
Yeah, we really. I mean, one of the things. I mean, actually, this is. I mean, maybe this. I don't want it to be just semantics, but we the people who get our e-letters, we don't call them an e-letter list. We call them subscribers. And it's a big difference, you know, and if because we want to treat them like subscribers, even though they're getting the e-letter for free, if we think about them as subscribers, as if they were paid, you just treat them differently, you know, as opposed to an affiliate who just, you know, pounds the list all day long with offers.
Well, that is, that's a, you know, if there's a million-dollar secret, that is definitely one of them, to treat your free subscribers as if they were paid subscribers. And then there's that great lesson from Dick Benson, who was the master of selling magazine subscriptions. He basically said, yeah, you can pretty much sell anything, but the business is based on whether people resubscribe. And it's probably a better word than resubscribe.
Renewal.
And that renewal, exactly. but the business is based on the renewals. And here's the key. The renewals are based on the quality of the content.
That's right.
You know, so this is, you know, and we have these discussions in internet marketing too, but if we just simply look back to the what I call the hardball world of print and ink and postage, where a mistake would mean annihilation, you know, if you make a bad enough of a mistake in direct mail marketing, you are out. And so to keep a business going year after year after year and growing from a, you know, from a basement to a couple of million a year to, you know, 100 million plus a year, you really got to be paying attention to things. And the key comes down to the quality of the content. And this makes, you know, if you think of yourself on the consumer side, this makes total sense. Nobody wants to read pitches. Nobody wants to read hot air. But you're very happy to read content. You'll even, you know, play hooky for work to read good content, you know.
Yeah.
But so good content being the root of everything. Hey, one more sidebar.
Go ahead. I'll give you two rules of thumb because you mentioned Benson. One is he used to say marketers don't sell renewals, editors do. And also a basic rule of thumb of direct marketing is it's a lot, and it's true in every piece of marketing, it's a lot easier to, you know, keep a customer than get a new one.
Absolutely. And by the way, if you're listening to this and thinking, well, I don't have a subscription model, I don't even have renewals, how does this apply to me? Actually, you do have renewals. You have renewals every day you send out an email.
That's right.
Your individual readers are making the decision whether to open it and read it or not. And you know, I've talked about this for years and years, but there's a lot of people with 100,000, supposedly 100,000 people on their email list, but only have about 50 readers. You know, that's not a win. That's not a win.
No, absolutely. You know? Good point.
Yeah. So, you know, I we don't use the word branding much in direct marketing, but it is helpful to have that concept always in the back of your mind. Yeah, obviously we want the highest, you know, response rates. We want the highest return on our marketing investment. But we also have to keep in the back of our mind that we're creating, I guess, a brand idea, a brand awareness, a brand, not necessarily awareness, but an image of our company for the future. And this probably, you know, going back to the decision that internet marketers have to make, are you running from one promotion to another, or are you building a business? Are you trying to squeeze today's you know, blood out of, you know, out of the stone at the cost of the future reputation of your business? And think very carefully before you go, you know, make a decision on this. It's far better, in my opinion, and I think it proves out. You know, we've been managing to keep doing this for years and years. Boardrooms have been doing this for years and years. We can look at a lot of other examples. It's a lot better to focus on quality content and treating the customers very well, and even your free subscribers as if they were paid subscribers. Now, a sidebar, your movement to the health arena, I imagine this was helped to a degree, maybe a large degree, by Michael Fishman. And maybe we could talk just briefly about Michael, because he's so self-effacing, you'd never know all the things that he's done and accomplished and continues to do from a conversation with him. He acts quite normal. In fact, he is normal, but he's also extremely accomplished. And maybe since it's so hard for me to get him to blow his own horn, maybe we could talk a little bit about Michael and his just unique role in modern direct marketing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and Michael, you know, he gets mad when I call him a list broker he's a recovering list broker, I'm a recovering list manager, but I don't have to apologize for it. And I think when I met Michael, actually, I sold to Michael. He was a list broker with some really interesting clients that he built over time. And I was out there marketing the boardroom list. So basically, he went from being a broker to my manager, you know, me selling to him. And then over time, I said, well, wait a minute. You know, he's brokering for Rodale Press and Phillips Publishing and, you know, all these great health mailers. Why not us? But by then, we had become such good friends. You know, I hate doing business with friends. But then again, you can't help it when, you know, you get into a business where you kind of fall in love with the business and start falling in love with the people that you work with. So he became our number one list broker. And it was interesting because in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, we already had a very established direct marketing business. So he had to come in and try to kind of, you know, beat out brokers who were already doing a lot of our, I mean, when I say brokers, I'm talking about media buying in this case. I mean, that's what we're talking about. We're just talking about the broker who would represent us in terms of renting lists for us. Or finding
If I could just give a quick definition of terms, the list manager would be the company, or would be the person inside the company who takes, you know, makes sure that the list, the company's list, is making money through sales or through rentals, actually, to other companies. And this is an old, tried and true revenue source in direct mail. If your list works, it's a good chance it might work for other offers. So the list manager is the person that makes sure that list is in good shape and makes sure that list is well promoted to the world.
Right.
And then
right.
The list broker.
And the list broker is definitely basically there are four players. If you just wanted to, if you put it in your mind, there's the mailer, who's the company that's actually creating an offer. That mailer would go to a list broker and say, go find me lists to mail. The broker then goes and finds lists through list managers. Every list is represented by a list manager. Most of them not in house. Most of them with an outside company. We just happen to have in-house list management. So it goes from the mailer, broker find me lists, broker finds lists from the list managers, And then the list managers are representing what we call list owners, who also could be mailers. So it's sort of that four, this four play. I used to teach a course, like a two-day course, in the list business. And I'd start with the players and their roles. It sounds like a Jeopardy category, but those are the four. Those are the four basic players. So it goes mailer, broker, manager, owner, and then it could go the other way. To it, you know, reverses the other way. So it's really
you were essentially representing the owner. You were the mailer, and you were the manager.
That's correct. That's correct.
I mean, the boardroom, and then
I was the owner and the manager in the same discussion, because we had in-house list management. We were also a mailer when I talked to Michael to go find me lists. But then if Michael was bringing me somebody to use our list, then he's a broker that I'm selling to. So it's, you know, it's an incestuous business in a lot of ways, but one that is so interesting. And you look at the internet marketers of today in terms of affiliate marketing, in terms of revenue share and swaps of files, and I run my ad in your e-letter, you run your ad in my, you know, vice versa. This has been going on forever. The analogy is list exchanges. You know, people have been lists forever, and Michael was instrumental in creating incredible relationships for us in the marketplace to be able to exchange and rent tons of names that we had not rented before.
Yeah, people who want to learn how to do, you know, affiliate marketing and JV marketing, or want to do it better, or want to do it on a higher level, could learn and profit so much from hearing from people like Brian and Michael, who do this, you know, have been doing this for decades now in the print arena on a mass scale. And so Michael is in a state of evolution, and I know he doesn't like to be called a list broker, but Michael is kind of the lifeblood guy for a direct marketing business, because direct mail business, because it's entirely based on new leads, just like all businesses are, and those leads are generated by mail. And so to grow, you have to find a great broker who knows, not only knows where all the lists are and knows the qualities of all the lists and can do research, but also is imaginative, as that great story that was told at the Gary Bensavenga, the one-time-only Gary Bensavenga seminar, where Gary had an individual letter that was mailed over 100 million times.
Yes.
And of course, the significance of that is Gary got paid a nickel for every time that letter was mailed. So,
like,
you know, just
that's why Gary's 100 million. Retired, right?
Yeah, that's you know, that was a nice payday. And behind the scenes, okay, so the copy obviously was incredible, but also part of that team, and this applies directly to internet marketing, part of that team was Michael Fishman finding new lists to mail that winning letter to. And this is exactly parallel to internet marketing. You know, you find something that really works, you sell as much as you can to your list, to your close friends' lists, and then what? Well, if you're lucky, you'll find a Michael Fishman type person who can go out, who already either knows where everything is or is very good at finding it, and can find other outlets for your offer. And that's where the, you know, if people are looking for the biggest possible payday, it's having somebody like that, either developing that ability on your own or finding somebody or partnering with somebody who has that skill. And Michael's, I mean, easily one of the best. I think if there were, has he been put in a list Hall of Fame yet? Is there a list Hall of Fame?
There is a list leader of the year every year. He was never voted list leader of the year, but I think now that he's, you know, kind of moving his career into different directions, I don't know if he'll, if people will remember, you know, because he also did it with, you know, a lot of people do it with a little more fan, you know. Again, as you said, he's self-effacing and stayed behind the scenes. The other thing, though, that's a masterful thing to be able to do in the list business that Michael was particularly good at, was taking this, like, two brokers take the same list and one segments it one way and one segments it another. That can make all the difference in the world. And I'm not talking about just hotlines, you know, more recent names versus not, but, you know, knowing that certain lists are, I'm making this up, but a certain list, you know that the main product they're selling that quarter was a women's book, but whatever male names, the M-A-L-E names they might have on the file that quarter would be more responsive because they only had a couple of hot books that went to men. I'm making that up, but that's the kind of thing that you would never know unless you do the research, and you're not going to get that from a list manager who sends you a data card, they call a data card, which talks about the list, you're never going to know without asking a lot of questions what's kind of beneath. I used to have an expression that said data cards, which is the language of the list business, are guilty until proven innocent. So basically you have to ask the questions that aren't on that data card that are not obvious to find out how to segment that list. And again, it applies today to the internet marketplace. You know, because email is so cheap, it's like, well, let's mail everybody. It doesn't make a difference. Well, think about this. Even just little things like I'm mailing to 100,000 names, of which 5,000 have already bought the product. Well, it's cheap enough to mail 100,000, but wouldn't it be better to mail 95,000 and then mail the other 5,000 offer number two? That just doesn't happen.
Yeah, and that's where huge, vast amounts of money are being left on the table.
Absolutely.
Right there. Again, it goes back to if you're in a paper and ink and postage environment, you have to think this way. You have to be really rigorous and think everything through extremely carefully.
Right.
And the thing that I've always tried to do since the very beginning and continue to do and why I always like to have great direct marketers join us, classic direct marketers from the print side, is, you know, this kind of thinking applied to the internet is what creates the big success stories. We have a grad that came to us, his name's Lloyd Irvin, and he's interesting because after college, he got involved in wrestling, which is very unusual. Usually people who are going to be wrestlers start, you know, early in life, but he didn't get involved till after. And became one of the fastest, I think the fastest person to get a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Wow.
I know Marty's got a black belt in the karate,
right?
He does.
Yeah.
And so not only was he I think the fastest black belt ever, but he also has been twice world champion in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But when he came to us to learn internet marketing, he didn't know anything about internet marketing. He didn't know what an opt-in was. He didn't know what a autoresponder was. Had a sense of lists because he'd been doing some Valpak stuff. He ran a martial arts school, and he was making money, but it wasn't great. You know, it was not setting the world on fire. But here's the moral to the story. He is a great student, and he got very serious about segmenting lists. And all the things that you're talking about, you know, for instance, if somebody's already bought something, mail them the next offer. Don't just, you know, sloppily, casually, carelessly send them an offer for something they've already bought. But he thought this stuff through with exquisite precision. And he has built his various businesses. His first big hit was, of course, selling wrestling videos.
Right.
But he's got now a variety of businesses. And every year with a very – I mean, we're talking skeletal staff. I think he's got three or four people total. They bounce up against $10 million a year regularly in direct marketing-driven sales. So, guys, if you think that this idea of segmenting and applying a little bit more rigor – it's because Brian and I are bitter about having to, you know, go through the snow, you know, waist high snow on the way to school with no shoes back, you know, in the 80s. It's not that. It's that there's a lot of money, significant money, to be made. In fact, I would say people that are hitting barriers in their income or with their businesses are hitting them because they're not segmenting, and they're taking sort of a spray and pray approach to their marketing, which, you know what, it will work. It will generate revenue. Sometimes you'll get lucky and will generate significant revenue. But I think the 90%, the hidden underneath the ice, you know, underneath the surface of the water of the iceberg, really comes from this thinking things through and the segmenting and the planning. And to take this back to Michael, he likes to call himself a strategist, and I think that really is a fair description of what he does, because
yes,
the list knowledge, which in his case is incredibly detailed, is the fuel for his strategy. And I think it's fair to say Michael in the health arena is absolutely at the top of the heap in terms of assisting companies in marketing health related products, whether it's info products or physical products.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. In fact, he has a health summit every year that he brings together 50 or 60 of the best health marketers in the country, and it's kind of the event everybody goes to. So Yeah, he really carved out that health niche, and as you say, he you know, really helped us grow that as sort of our number one category. So
it's fascinating how you know, Boardroom started with one idea, which was, you know, these digests of practical business advice, and then, you know, gradually shifted over time, discovered the tax arena, which is perennially popular, and then discovered health, and found that health was really the growth area, and I know Michael definitely was a big help there.
Yes.
Well, hey, where should we go now with this? There's so many things for us to talk about. As I get on this call with you, I realize we could talk all day. Tell us a little. You dropped some good hints about what you'll be talking about in New York City, April 15th, at our System Club seminar, right before the System seminar. What other kinds of things can we expect to hear from you that day?
Well, it's this. I gave a speech recently at an internet conference, and the conference was. The title of it was Seven Steps to Launch, L-A-U-N-C-H. And the title of my speech there was the word launch was not invented by an internet marketer. And then the subtitle,
really?
And the subtitle was how a 30-year direct marketing veteran can still justify his existence. And in the same way that I did there, I may start with something self-deprecating, but I'm not going to stay there, because I think that the things I really want to focus on for your group, I think that would be most helpful, are to talk about, as I think I hinted at this already, that I think there, to kind of talk about what I see out there where I'll say the internet marketers and the online marketers get an A+ in already. But then I was very generous and said I want to give them a solid B in some other areas. And the areas that I'm going to explore in detail are three in particular. One is going to be list segmentation, database marketing. We've talked about some of that stuff today. I'll get into much more detail about our commitment to database marketing and why list segmentation is so important and what the results have been as it pertains to direct mail for us and how it still pertains to internet marketing. The second area is creative and copy. That's an area that I think, again, I, you know, for as good as I see offers and technology in the internet space, I see copy that is less than exemplary. Let me put it that way. And so I'm going to talk about this whole idea of, well, you know, if someone's killing it on the internet with mediocre copy, imagine what they would do with amazing copy and spending a little bit more time with it. So I think it's a good to great conversation that I want to have with your folks about where they might be missing things on the creative front. And then the third area is market research. I think that while I'm not a big research hound, and I came out of a, you know, direct marketing, everything is accountable and measurable and everything's about ROI, and I don't want to hear about spikes in sales at my retail distribution because I did a space ad in a magazine. I'm not playing in that game, and I'm not playing in the game of the three P's that give me hives: publicity, public relations, and what's my third P? Publicity, public relations, and sales promotion.
Right.
So I'm not, you know, so everything's got to be measurable, but there are some measurable ways to do research so that you don't throw good money after bad. And I think that, as you said, there's this impatience among the marketers of today to get into a business quickly, and speed is not always the virtue. I mean, being first to market is always a virtue. But, you know, doing it right as opposed to doing it fast is important. Doing it so that you're not a one-hit wonder is important. So all of those concepts will be explored kind of like to kind of first take my direct marketing rules of thumb that I've learned over 30 years and show how they all apply to today's marketers, then talk about what I think today's marketers are doing great and what I think they're just doing good and can be great. And then I'm going to do some case histories from Boardroom that kind of apply some of the concepts that I just talked about. So that's kind of the structure of what I'll talk about. I mean, a lot of it we've touched on already today, but the details that I have, for the attendees is going to be a lot more than what we were able to discuss in the hour today.
Great. I may have to give you some extra time. I'm thinking it well worth it. And I wanted to point something out to our listeners. When Brian talks about copy, this is a company that hired Gary Bensavenga. This is a company that hired Eugene Schwartz. This is a company that dealt with the very best of the best of the best copywriters of all time. So he's not just speaking idly when he talks about ad copy standards. This is a guy that really knows what good ad copy is. And I'm kind of having this vision now of the seminar. I see you and Michael and maybe me to a degree being kind of like the flame on the stove. And our internet experts, we've got some great guys this year, as the soup ingredients or the stew ingredients in the pot, and we're going to get the thing heated up with classic, deep-rooted, no-nonsense, this has been tested a million times, direct marketing principles, and then we're going to use that heat to create a really interesting dish of not only current internet marketing strategies that work, but also looking forward to the future of ways people could practically and profitably think about taking their businesses in the future.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any opportunity, but it could be interesting. Again, you probably have this mapped out pretty well. But one of the things that could be interesting is sort of like hopefully I'll have time to do some Q&A, and if I don't have time right after my presentation, I will have time in some of the breaks and things like that. So I'd love to talk with some of the internet marketers. But also there might be an opportunity to do sort of like a panel at some point where, I'll come back, sometime during the weekend if you want, where, Michael and I on a panel, I'm making this up, with two of the best internet marketers that are speaking, and not argue, but, kind of talk about, because I think there are so many sweet spots that overlap. It's a Venn diagram. And
yep.
I would be really open to doing that. I'm not asking you to do that. I'm saying that
yep.
if you did do that, I'd be willing to participate in something like that because I'm not kind of there to lecture about how bad the internet marketers are, how sloppy they are. I've used some words in this interview that make it sound like I might be angry, or that I think that everybody that's doing internet marketing today doesn't know what they're doing. That's not my game. My game is not like a put-down game. My game is actually that I'm learning so much from the internet marketers about things that I didn't do well for my 30 years. So I'm like embracing it in a way, and I want to bring something to the table that would be a gift to them, which is a much better way than, I know a lot of people who are like me would get up in front of a group and say, I've got 30 years experience, this is my track record, you guys don't know what you're doing. And I want you to know that is not my approach at all. In fact, it's sort of like the opposite. It'll sound like a little bit of a lecture at times, but that's not my game. My game is 1 + 1 = 3. So I just want everybody to know that, and especially the other internet marketers, I'm not looking to get assassinated either. I'm hoping to, when I come to a session like yours, I'm speaking, but I'm learning at the same time. So I'm going to be listening to all those other marketers, and I expect to take away ideas back to my lair that, are kind of complement what I know already and supplement what I know already, which, it sounds kind of corny, but I just want everybody to know that I'm not one of these people that is going to be pointing his finger at all the internet marketers saying, you guys don't know what you're doing. That's not it.
Well, the smart internet marketers are really definitely open to hear how they can do things better. And really, that's what you're talking about is how we can do things better using the hard-won lessons and expensively won lessons of the past. And, it's funny, I didn't realize this until just this moment, but this kind of brings me in my life in a way full circle, because one of my very first exposures to great direct marketing was through Boardroom. Not only getting their mailing pieces, which are legendary. If you're a copywriter, you know what I'm talking about. If you're not, ask a good or great copywriter. List the top 10 companies of the modern era in terms of generating great ad copy, and Boardroom will be on that very short list. And so, just getting the Boardroom advertisements were amazing. the other great help to me in the 80s, when it was, by the way, it was very hard to get this kind of information not that long ago. It's just, unless you were in the industry and had access to somebody with a lot of experience, this stuff could not be had at any price. And one of the things that Boardroom did through Marty's inspiration and Brian executing was the Old Timers Day, where he would bring together really great marketers just a fantastic learning environment. And I still have some of the print things that you did.
Oh yeah, we have also. I'm going to talk to you offline, Ken, about some. You know, again, I don't want to overstep, but I am willing to give away some things to the audience. Given my friendship to you and that I am flattered that you asked me to speak. So I have some things that might be really interesting to give away to folks, because I don't sell anything from the stage or anything like that. So, but I think I might like to give some stuff away. So I'll talk to you about that.
Oh, great! I'm all ears, because I have a whole bunch of the. You used to print these little books. Trip from the Old Timers Day. I mean, those things they're gold. And I found a cassette. I think we talked about this a while ago. I found a cassette of a meeting that you ran, an Old Timers meeting that you ran with Martin Grossman, right?
Gordon Grossman.
Gordon Grossman and Dick Benson. And wow, that is illuminating. And even though the numbers they're talking about, you know, the price of postage and the cost to put something in mail almost sound like there is from another planet, the principles are mind-boggling and completely valuable. And I hope someday, I started to make some inquiries about this. I hope someday somebody takes that stuff and makes it available again for people to listen to, because it's solid gold.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we can create some legacy out of.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, guys, you can see why I'm so excited about having Brian Kurtz at the final system seminar, System 2011. We're going to be in New York City, or to be precise, we're going to be across the Hudson River in Jersey City, right looking at the Manhattan skyline at the Westin, April 15th through 17th. If you're flying in, the easiest way to get in is through Newark Airport. If you know your way around New York, I guess you could come in through any airport. I want to encourage people, too, if it's going to be, hopefully the weather will be warmer than it is now when we're recording this call. If you've never been to New York City before, you're going to be a 20-minute subway. We call it, in the Jersey side, it's called the PATH train. Very safe, clean subway ride to Manhattan. And if you've never been to New York City, you know, this is a great time of the year. April in New York is usually pretty nice. Again, April 15th through 17th. For more information, go to the System Seminar. This will be the last time that I put on a huge live event. Various reasons. We're a really small company. I think we're a micro enterprise, to be precise. And I just want to do some other stuff in the internet marketing arena. And it's hard to put on an event this big and keep the quality up this high and do the other things that I'd like to do. And I'm going to continue the research, going to continue writing, and I want to do more just regular teaching, because I guess of the economic climate these days, a lot of my neighbors and relatives and friends have actually paid more attention to what I do for a living, and I've been just informally tutoring people, and I realize how much I just like the actual hands-on training, and since I'm in a position to be able to do more of that, that's what I'm going to do. So this, if you've been to the system, you know what it's about, and if you want to experience it and get one last jolt, now's the time. If you've never been to the system, I'm not going to have any false modesty on this point. This is one of the great marketing education environments on Earth, and it has been for the last 9 years. And on the internet side, in terms of consistency, there's just nothing like it. No one's run this long. No one's kept their quality up this high for this long. So think about it. Listen to all our faculty interviewers. Thank you very much, Brian. We're really looking forward to you in April, and I'm at least as pleased that you can join us as you are about attending. So the systemseminar.com, and thank you, Brian.
Okay, we'll see you in April.